Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Brian Callahan just wrapped up his press conference. Joe, a couple interesting things on that front. Number one, he did confirm that the starters are going to play in the preseason. Not that that is a huge surprise. Now, to what degree they play, we'll see. It kind of made it sound like in the first game it could be maybe a series or two for Cam Ward and the starters.
It was so exciting for a minute there. Like, oh, there you go. Give them a half.
And it was like, they might touch the ball once. I was like, okay. All right, cool. But looks like they're going to play not only in this one, but we'll play in all three preseason games, according to Brian Callahan. So, more and more, Joe, like that seems to be, you know, we saw some of that last year. It seems like more guys around the league are playing a little bit this year in the preseason. I think coaches are trying to get their guys at least a little bit of work in the preseason.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously very copycat. I don't know. Maybe someone's written about it. At some point, some coach in the NFL was like, you know, screw these preseason games.
Yep.
And then everybody starts sitting their guys and – I've talked before about watching a Bengals-Lions preseason game. Kijana Carter was an incredible player at Penn State and college, and like his first carry of a preseason game, he blew his ACL. And in the 90s, that was a different deal than it is now. And it's like, man, you know, you have a situation like that. There's been plenty of other examples of injuries in preseason games, and it's like, why? Why? But also the why is – yeah, if that team – oh, wait, they're sending their guys out there and they're actually going to have a little bit of timing and have a little bit – we know the padded practices are way less now. A lot of the – I mean, a lot of the wins, quote-unquote, air quotes, for the NFLPA is like less practice time and stuff like that. And some of that's good. There's some player safety elements to that, but also like teams are way less polished now on week one of a season than they used to be.
Yep.
So if other teams start doing stuff to be more prepared, you're like, well, I guess we better do it too. It'd be great to see that trend come back a little bit. So these preseason games are like somewhat watchable a little bit, you know, to actually see what a football team is going to look like on game day, at least see a little bit of it. So, but I think for the Titans, again, given the reality of this season, which they can acknowledge or not, the front office does, everybody who's actually doing the football doesn't, and I don't expect them to, but they also, you, the young quarterback, like you got to get them work, I think, especially because Callahan said in there somewhere, like, yeah, you don't want that week one to be like too much of an eye opener, I think he said, right?
Yep.
Well, it's going to be an eye opener.
Oh, yeah.
At Denver. In that elevation, in that stadium with a super pumped up fan base.
And that defense specifically.
And that defense against your rookie quarterback. It will be an eye-opener. I mean, you can play Cam all the preseason games, all the snaps, and it's still going to be an eye-opener. But, yeah, I think that's why as much work as you can get, and I think that's a good thing.
Brian Callahan also addressing his blow-up at practice the other day and called it a teachable moment. Is what he said. And he did point out, which I took note of in that answer of, you know, you guys say it's uncharacteristic. You're not around me every minute of every day. So I think that was Brian Callahan's way of saying, yeah, this is not the first time I've, like, jumped down their throats out there when it comes to maybe in a team meeting or whatever it is. So I did take note of that response by him, but said, you know, he was kind of frustrated with the way that last practice period went. And saw that as an opportunity to get on his team and to hold his team to the higher standard there. So that's what Brian Callahan had to say, a teachable moment for the Titans on Sunday at that expense. I would have loved to have known what he would have said in the immediate aftermath of that and not with 3 days to think about what answer he was going to give.
Yeah. Adam in Portland has switched from ripping me to ripping Callahan. He says, if I'm ever struggling to sleep, I'm going to put on that press conference. What a boring dude. That practice yelling was absolutely manufactured. And this bland version is the real deal. Way to get us hyped up, coach. So, I guess I'm not following the logic. I don't look, his John C. Reilly speech, I believe we're going to win. Like, that was manufactured. That was like, I'm going to try to, like, get my, you know, this is supposed what I'm supposed to do. So, I'm going to try to get a little more oomph in it. That felt manufactured. And I don't see how, again, not that we saw it or we have audio of it, but just because this is his default, that you don't think he can actually get angry. I mean, if he can't get angry, then he's actually like an AI coach, right? Yeah. I think he's a human being. So I'm assuming that like anger can be genuine, especially if you're a coach like him. Let's see, you're a public figure. Everybody's thinking you're getting fired in the next year. You're coming off the worst team in the NFL last year, and they're playing like crap right now. We don't think that could be genuine anger?
Yeah.
Just because his default is to be calm and positive? I mean, I think that's a failing logic by you, Adam and Portland.
Here's the other thing. Like, this is the NFL, and I think this is true really in all levels of sports, but certainly as you get into the college level and the NFL level when – you know, for lack of a better term for college guys, I mean, they're professionals now. If you start manufacturing stuff out there, you're going to lose the locker room very quickly. Like, if the team looks at your coach and says, yeah, this guy's just trying to drum something up right now, and this is not him, that doesn't play very well with professional athletes. Like, you have to be genuine. So, look, I fully recognize that there are some people that are probably built more for yelling and screaming than other people are.
Yeah.
But if, like, the players got out there and they just detected any sense of inauthenticity, you know, just not a coach being phony out there, that's not going to go very well for a locker room in the National Football League.
Right. So the guys walking out of that pre-camp thing, I'm sure a couple were like, you know, okay, man.
Yeah.
But I would assume this was real anger, you know.
Yeah,
and again, it seems like it was justified. Look, like it was warranted.
Yeah,
anger. I'd
say I like it. And again, you know, I think probably too often we overblow the coach has got to show some passion. And you know, we've talked about that with the Titans. We've talked about that. You know, I remember when John Hines was the coach of the Predators, and all these Predators fans are like, he never says anything back there. Like, he never does anything on the bench. It's like, yeah, you know, I've seen John Hines blow up at people before. Like, it happens. We probably overblow that too much. But I think every now and then, part of your job as a head coach is when you see your offense or your team or whatever it is slipping below whatever standard you've set for yourself, it's on you to put a stop to it. Like, that's why you're there. It's on you to put a stop to it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, look, what you hope, as every single coach will always say, is that player coach teams are better, is you hope that you got guys who are going to scream it at their teammates. You hope you have people who are enforcing in the locker room and all that stuff. But
sometimes even with those teams, the coach has got to step in and do it.
Exactly.
Yep.
And Vrabel one time made a point to me, or the story he was talking about, but he was saying, like, what's really the difference? Yes, there are some older guys or some, you know, guys who've been in the league, but, like, what's really the difference when you're coaching a 22-year-old rookie, 23-year-old, or like a 21-year-old at Clemson or Alabama? You know,
yeah.
I mean, they're air quotes, they're kids. You know, you're in your early 20s. It's basically this, you know, largely the same thing. And most of the guys of the 90. Most of them are very young because most of them are guys who, you know, are just trying to make it in the league, and so
yeah,
it's really not that different in a lot of ways.
David on the text line says, "Could this Titans team be one of the worst NFL teams of all time? Could they be historically bad like some of the old Lions teams? It kind of feels that way to me. I mean, look, I'm not going to say they couldn't be. I don't think they're going to be very good." I got a hard time imagining, like, you know, 1-16 or 0-17 or something like that. Like, I don't think they're going to be that bad. You know, they were pretty bad last year, and they won 3 games. You know, is this roster better than last year's roster? I guess that depends on the eye of the beholder. But
I think so.
I think so. Probably not dramatically, but I think so. So, I mean, they could end up – I mean, look, guys, they could win 4 or 5 games this year and still be pretty darn bad.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be like Cleveland Browns 0-16 or Detroit Lions 0-16 bad.
Yeah, like most of those teams had like a really bad quarterback situation. And, I mean, look, it could be the case with Cam Ward as a rookie. But, like, most of them had – like, I'm trying to think. I remember, like, the Lions had, like, Mike McMahon – who was just like a journeyman who played at Rutgers, and he was like a pretty good athlete, but he couldn't play quarterback. Like, usually it's like a really dire quarterback situation to have a chance to be that bad. And also, you would assume that, first of all, we do think the offensive line is better, and you're assuming that some of these rookies are going to make a difference. So it turns out that the rookies aren't amounting to anything at all. Like, the receivers do nothing. Oladejo does nothing. Okay.
I mean,
we can start talking about an awfully bad football team.
The 2017 Cleveland Browns went 0-16, and their quarterback for the majority of that year, and God bless him, I love this guy, played in a softball game with him and warmed up with him. My guy.
Yeah.
DeShone Kizer.
Yeah, there you
not
go.
Not very good at quarterback. I mean, that year he played 15 games for Cleveland and threw 11 touchdowns and 22 picks.
Including three to Kevin Byard on one day, yeah, 20, I believe, if I remember
picks.
Correctly.
Yeah. 53.6% completion percentage. 2,894 yards. So yeah,
that's what it takes.
That's a pretty special quarterback play, and not special in the way that you're looking for. Pretty specially bad quarterback play that they had. And that's pretty high contributor to going 0-16.
Yeah, that's
I don't think it's going to be that bad for the Titans. If it is,
then
we're talking about a lot of things.
Yeah, we're exactly. If it is, then there's different things we're talking about. They're like, oh my goodness, what have they done, basically.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your reaction to get to on the Titans front. We will do that. Coming up next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. .1025 The Game and Souls for Souls have teamed up for a back-to-school fundraiser. Souls for the 615 to provide new shoes for kids experiencing homelessness in Nashville. You can help a child in Middle Tennessee step into the new school year with confidence by donating $20 for a new pair of athletic shoes. For more information and to donate, visit thegamenashville.com/shoes. Souls for the 615 is sponsored by Macero and 12 South. Go check them out for handcrafted cocktails, bold plates, great happy hour, and elevated hospitality. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. If you missed it, we did announce earlier, Paul Kuharsky will be back with us for his weekly interviews, normally going to be on Wednesdays at the same time it's been, at 8 o'clock from 8 to 9. Obviously, Titans are practicing today, so not happening today. PK will be with us on Friday from Tampa Bay to go over the joint practice with the Bucs. Looking forward to that.
Probably not from the actual Bay, but from Tampa.
Yeah, he will be in Tampa. Hopefully not in the Bay.
Or maybe he will be, though.
Hopefully head above water. That'd be good.
Out there with some avocado tequila.
Well, maybe so.
Adam in Portland saying I'm rage baiting. So what am I rage baiting about? You know, he doesn't think it was authentic. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's not. Now he's like, oh, you're right. Joe Montana was nowhere as near as good as those other guys. I didn't say nowhere near as good. I think that Dan Marino and John Elway are better quarterbacks than Joe Montana. I didn't say there's like some huge gap, but I think they're both better quarterbacks than Joe Montana. Sorry.
Hey, we're all entitled to
our
opinions.
I don't think it's that crazy.
I don't think it's crazy, no.
Ed was on the way to a golf outing, couldn't respond to my nonsense. He says, so you would take Marino over Montana if you had one game to win? Yes.
Hit him straight, Ed.
Dan Marino never had anything resembling a running game. Joe Montana had Roger Craig, also Tom Rathman. What a freaking fullback that guy was. Also,
lost start in today's game. Need better fullback play.
Dan Marino did not have defenses like Joe Montana had either. Joe Montana played for a far superior organization and team, and he had the best receiver of all time catching his passes. Marino had, you know, Duper and Clayton. They're good. Yes, I'm taking Dan Marino. Thank you.
Let's head to our 1025 The Game phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our buddy Mark in Nashville to the program. Mark, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, how you doing, Robert? Joe, you know, I'm going to get to you in just a minute.
Okay.
You know I'm listening. Joe, you know I'm listening to you.
Okay,
you know, I'm listening to you. But, Robert, first of all, I'm going to address the situation with the Titans.
Okay.
Yes, that's a bad roster. Yes, they need to play them in all the preseason game. I'd play them all four quarters. I mean, they really need to pick up their game and become a better team. But that is a bad roster. Cam does need those preseason games to give him a little more experience. They'll help him out a little more, preparing for the regular season. I'm not going to question Callahan on his mental thing right now, all the raging he might be doing. I'm not even going to question that. He's got to win. But, Joe, I'm coming back to you. You know I love you, Joe. But, Joe, the disrespect You giving Joe Montana? Come on here,
Preach.
Joe.
No, he's a great quarterback.
Preach.
Joe. Look, everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got a system, Joe. I mean, when Brady was there, it was who? Charlie Weiss.
Bill O'Brien. Yeah, Bill O'Brien, Josh McDaniels, all of them. Yep.
Yeah. Josh McDaniels. Everybody's got a system. Walsh had a system. Great, like you said, the West Coast is probably the greatest offensive system there ever was. It still exists. But, Joe, the disrespect you giving Joe Montana. Yo, he's the greatest there was. Clutch. He wasn't a great athlete like Steve Young. He didn't have to be. He had that arm. He was a pitcher, Joe.
I have nothing bad to say about him.
Yeah, Joe Money pitched the rock. Marino was great too, Joe. But, I mean, on my list, I got Joe Money first, Brady second. Now, Brady won 7 Super Bowls. If Joe had stayed in San Francisco, he'd at least won 5. I mean, come on, Joe. Don't disrespect this man.
You know
like
what? Thanks, Mark. And Mark is not alone. Now, yeah. And there are people who are on that boat, and that's fine. That's why it's fun to have these discussions. But, I mean, it's like the hypothetical thing. So, plunk Marino into the exact same spot that Joe Montana was in.
Yeah.
And give Bill Walsh that arm. Put John Elway in the exact same spot. I mean, to me, I think John Elway is a little bit better version of Steve Young. Tremendous athlete, runner. Also, one of the best arms. I mean, John Elway, man, for people who aren't of a certain age, John Elway was the, like you draw up a quarterback in the lab, that's your guy.
Yeah.
He finally ended up winning two later. He went to the Super Bowl with teams that were far inferior to the teams that were destroying them in the Super Bowl, such as the Niners, such as Washington and the Giants. So it's an interesting discussion. I'm not disrespecting him saying he stunk or anything. I just think those guys are a little bit better.
You know,
and they didn't have the same situation he had.
I didn't anticipate the Joe Montana slander today or Joe Montana discussion, but it's always welcome when it comes out here. Josh from Lebanon says Joe Montana is like Emmitt Smith. Product of the great players around them on their teams. You put Marino or Elway on the 49ers, and they've got as many Super Bowls, just like putting Barry Sanders behind that offensive line in Dallas, he would have destroyed Walter Payton's record.
Josh, are you coming directly out of my brain? Are you tapped into my brain? Because let me tell you something, buddy. That is one of the greatest texts of all time. Thank you. No, you're right. I mean, Barry Sanders, like Emmitt Smith, is a great example of he was a great player. He does not belong in the discussion of the top 10, 15 backs of all time.
Jeez.
He doesn't.
The top 10 or 15?
Okay.
He's the all-time leading rusher in the league.
I know. I understand.
Let's put you like the top eight.
It's the best offensive line of all time.
I hear you.
Best offensive line of all time. With Aikman, with Irvin. I mean, just saying. Okay, fine. Top eight.
Emmitt Smith, a borderline Hall of Famer.
No. I mean, how many running backs are in the Hall of Fame?
He wasn't as good as Bishop Sankey. You put Bishop Sankey on that Cowboys team, that guy'd be unbelievable.
See, now look at what you're doing, you know. You're rage baiting.
I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, the legends here in sports that you don't hate. Like, was Gretzky good? Was Gretzky a good player?
I don't hate any of these people. I've told you I love Brady and Jordan.
Jason Arnett better than Wayne Gretzky?
I'll take Dino Cicerelli, man. Guy was tougher in
Dino. Yes. Hey, I'm just telling you. I did not expect this conversation to go that way.
So Adam in Portland, speaking of rage bane, he says, I have at least one take a day now where it's something completely wacky, so people get flustered and want to argue with you. Joe,
this is not new, by the way.
No, I've said this before.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't even know how we got to Joe Montana today. But it's not. This is not some strategy to get people pissed off. I don't think it's that crazy to think that Elway and Marino are better than Montana. I really don't. And I understand. I don't think it's that crazy to think Montana's better than Brady. You're welcome to think that if you want. I think it's these arguments. The reason that they're good arguments is because it's close, right?
Yeah.
But like when people get into, well, whoever wins is what matters. Then I say, great, because Nick Foles beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, better quarterback, right? Like you have to look at all the information.
I mean, Eli beat him twice.
Right.
Just saying.
And I'm not – and of course, none of us in our right minds would ever actually argue that Eli Manning's a better quarterback than Tom Brady, right?
I don't think
so. Of course we wouldn't. But, Marino didn't get a ring, so – okay. So tell me what he dealt with his entire career in Miami. They could not figure out how to put the right things around him.
Now I'm allowing my mind to wander back to that text in the last segment about like how bad could the Titans be. I mean, I pray to God that we are not talking about, you know, in mid-December the Titans having won one or two games. Give me more than that this year. I don't think they're going to be that bad. It's going to be hard to be that bad in today's NFL.
I don't think they're going to be that bad either. They could be better, and they could be right around there.
Yeah.
Because their schedule doesn't ease up until, like, they're probably way out of the playoff race, which is unfortunate. Like, if you could flip-flop their schedule, they could be like 3-2,
yeah.
You know, and be like, hey, okay, and get a little excitement and kind of hang around. It is the reverse of what they needed to
They
be.
Still have San Francisco and KC at the end of the season in December.
Yeah.
So. But they have, like, most of their winnable games are in their last, like, 6-7 games, right?
Yeah, Jacksonville, Cleveland, and then the Saints and Jacksonville again. Yeah.
I would love to know, like, going through the schedule, when is – and it's very hard to do this today without having seen anybody play yet and knowing what the injury situation is going to be like. I would love to know, like, when is the first time this year that the Titans will be favored to win a game? I would love to know it. Because, I mean, it's not going to be one of the first 2 weeks. I can guarantee you that. Like, are they going to be favored against the Colts in week 3 at home?
Possibly.
Maybe. I kind of doubt it.
Just depends on, obviously, it depends on what we see from both teams in the early going. I think that could be a pick-em-ish game. But, yeah, right now,
but like beyond
what's
that,
the line now? Colts probably by 2.5 or something, right?
Like, beyond that, maybe Cleveland in December. December the 7th, could they be favored on the road against Cleveland? Home against the Saints on December 28th, they could be. Again, you know, we will have seen and experienced a lot of football by that time, so it can. I'm just saying today, like, if Vegas is making the lines today, when's the first time the Titans are favored in game this year?
Yeah.
Does that game exist?
Yeah, that might be. It might be the Cleveland game. And again, like, even with them, they still have tons of talent on D.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
and it's a road game, as Robbie said.
It's a road game. Yeah,
yeah, so, yeah.
It's hard to find a road favorite.
Vegas doesn't know.
I mean, we know Dan Moore. You know, I'm glad he's looking good at camp. But all we heard is, well, he had to go up against Myles Garrett a lot. Myles Garrett and T.J. Watt and all these guys. I'm like, well, look, here he is again.
Yep, there you
go.
Myles
Garrett.
Enjoy them again. By the way, did Dillard retire?
I think it was Dennis Daly.
Oh, Daly retired.
It was Dennis Daly.
Okay, yeah. Dillard hanging on. Dennis Daly retired. All right, congratulations on a career. You were a football player in the NFL. Congrats.
Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Bill to the program. Bill, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning. I'm an old man. I'm 60 years old. I've been watching pro football since I was 5.
Fran Tarkenton's the greatest of all time. Come on.
Nope. I'm going to have to agree with Joe.
Wow. Who you got?
Dan Marino is the greatest pure passer of the football.
Joe's so happy over there.
John Elway is the most complete quarterback that I've ever seen.
Thank you for the call, Bill. Appreciate it.
Bill, you're the best.
Bill is just a totally reinforced Rex Rod over there. He's fired up.
Boom! Have some of that. And Big Joe,
I
know,
hit the table
too.
So hard it made my microphone drop down to the floor.
Sorry. That low T mic.
It's really struggling over there.
I'm trying to get the
it's
blood
like,
flowing again.
Where'd my microphone go? 615-737-1025, our phone number. Some interesting clips have come out from a Netflix documentary regarding Vanderbilt football and some of the things they had to say about Tennessee. We'll get into that.
Robbie's mad.
Coming up next, Robbie and Rex are at 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A lot of different thoughts on best quarterbacks out there. I just got a vote for Fran Tarkenton as the best quarterback of all time. So there you go.
Big Joe has weighed in, apparently, and Big Joe talks Dan Marino all the time. But also, Tim Hasselbeck said Elway yesterday.
Okay.
So, and he also brought up Brett Favre.
Yeah, Favre.
Yeah, we're having a Favre discussion right now.
We are. We are. See what happens.
Favre did a lot of things that, a lot of
stopping your tracks.
Notable. Yeah, stopping your tracks. That's right. Stopping your tracks and, oh my God, cover your eyes.
Speaking of quarterbacks, Joe, I guess Netflix has come out with this SEC docuseries.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really good.
And it's supposed to be really good. Looking forward to it. But some clips have surfaced of basically Vanderbilt getting ready for the Tennessee game. And there's a clip of Clark Lee in a meeting room, and he's screaming about how much he wants to beat Tennessee, and Diego Pavia screaming about how, like, basically any given Saturday, we can beat Tennessee. Any given Saturday. And, of course, those things have come out, and Vols fans found them, and they're having a lot of fun at the expense of Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia over the last couple of days when those clips have been coming out there. It is interesting to see. Like, we've talked about Pavia specifically and just the level of don't give a crap that guy has and, like, how much confidence he has. And look, there's no doubt, and we've talked about this before, I think some of it is a little delusional, but that's also what makes him tick, which is good. But I know Tennessee fans, like, Pavia is the exact type of guy. Number one, if you're Vanderbilt, you're allowed to have him. Number two, if you're a team like Tennessee or a fan base like Tennessee, he's exactly the type of guy that you love to hate. And, boy, has this sparked up some trash talk between Vanderbilt and Tennessee fans the last couple of days.
I mean, it's been – I've never seen anything like this. Do you have that, Ian? So this is – some of this is Clark Lee, too. So you might hear Clark Lee's voice. This is a kind of a cut-up of this back and forth here with the Vanderbilt perspective before the UT game of last year.
I want to beat Tennessee, and I need everyone to be on the same page.
Yes, sir.
We can beat Tennessee literally any given Saturday.
We're not leaving that stadium on Saturday without a win.
They think they're going to destroy us. Every single one of them dudes, you know. We're going to win this game at all costs.
That was quite some strong words from
Fart
Diego
every
Pavia.
One of those dudes. Fart
gonna,
them all.
We're going to win these games at all costs. Did not play out that way
did
for
not.
Vanderbilt.
No, look at you so gloating.
Are they
look
still
at you
in the
gloating.
Field?
Huh?
They said they weren't leaving the field without
a
win.
They did.
Are they still there?
Now, another part of the
I'm just telling you what he said.
I like when your little Vanderbilt hatred kind of bubbles
shot.
Up to the surface.
I don't
a little
hate
bit.
Vanderbilt. Yeah. I'm just saying that he said that they're not leaving the field without a win. So I wonder, always when people say that, I wonder if they're still there.
That's a fair question to ask. Now, they also showed the Tennessee players at Heupel in this series in the locker room, post-winning locker room, singing the "We don't give a bleep" about the whole school of Vanderbilt, which is an interesting one. That's one of those when Ohio State beats Michigan or Michigan State, they sing that "We don't give a damn about the whole state of Michigan." It's like the same song, but they say "We don't give a fart."
They don't. They said the other word. They said "damn."
You sure?
Yeah. I promise. There's a video of it.
Yeah, I know there's a video. I swear I saw that. Okay.
Well, I can't say that some of the guys in there didn't say it. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to besmirch your Vols.
I'm just saying.
I don't want to get you mad.
A little classy over there.
Be mad at Vanderbilt. No, Pavia, like seriously, name me the Vanderbilt athlete ever who is able to anger people the way he does.
I don't think there is one.
And in a way, I mean, we'll see how it plays out this year. Maybe it's not great to be, that targeted at Vanderbilt. You know, like you don't necessarily want people to be like, I got to get that guy. You kind of want it. Like sneaking up on people is kind of a good thing when you have a talent disadvantage, which I still think, most weeks they will this year. But, man, I mean, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, I would think you would love this because it's like finally someone who other people hate who plays for us,
Yeah.
Like they had great players at times. Zach Cunningham, they've had some great players. Jordan Matthews, friend of the show. But someone who people are actually like, I want to get that guy.
And I think people didn't like Jay Cutler because of like his face. We've talked about punchable faces in sports.
That's true. But was that in college?
But not really in college. Yeah. That was more of an NFL thing.
It was like once you got to the NFL and people
kind of, look at this guy. Yeah.
It's like he had to get to the NFL for people to know who the heck he was.
Right.
I said this. Yeah, I wrote this thing about who could be the next Indiana. And I eliminated Vanderbilt because I said one thing is name 10 players right now in college football more well-known going into this season than Diego Pavia. I bet you can't. You'd be naming like the top QBs.
Sure.
And, Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams. Like, he is that level of, like, college football personality because of 1 year. Pretty amazing.
And, by the way, it has come out that he was playing with a torn hamstring last year. So that is now out there.
I was so sure it was an ankle, but man, that's even worse.
Yeah, he's playing with a torn hamstring.
Unbelievable.
So obviously, you know, when he's healthy, hopefully he stays healthy this year, and we can kind of get the full picture of what that looks like. And again, you know, we've gone through Vanderbilt's schedule. It is not easy. And I mean, they're over under win totals 4.5 for a reason. They got a tough schedule. So we'll see what that looks like. But I mean, I'm telling you, Tennessee Vanderbilt again this year has got a chance to be pretty spicy, particularly if Tennessee is like, you know, okay, but they're not in the college football playoff discussion.
Yeah. And they might be, I mean, who knows? They might be a 3-loss team that has to win. Vanderbilt could be a 5-6 team that has to win. That's what we can hope for. Michael Madison says, as a Vandy fan, I'm willing to run through multiple brick walls for Diego and possibly give him my firstborn.
There you go.
Very next texter. Pavia is such a loser. This is coming from a very non-UT fan. I don't believe you.
I don't know.
The UT fans, I mean, they do not like him at all. Vol Twitter is all over him. And again, if you're Vanderbilt, you have to, like, a Vanderbilt fan, that's what I would think too. What Michael Madison is like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Matthew Nashville says, Pavia wants the smoke. He's going to get it when we break the Neyland sound record we set in 23 and get Admiral Schofield to film another Don't Let Up video. Pavia ain't ready for Neyland Loud. This is from Matthew in Nashville on the text line. Already talking some crap, some smack before the Tennessee Vanderbilt game in November.
Cameron says, Vandy fell apart as soon as people had a little tape. Pavia is setting them up to get massacred by a lot of people. That's not true, Cameron. I mean, it's, you know, obviously a lot of things had to come together for them to beat Alabama, including like the tipped pick six. Yep. But, I mean, again, go to the bowl game when he finally could run a little bit more. Georgia Tech had all kinds of tape and time to look at it, and he did his thing against actually a good defense. So, no, a defense that held Georgia down just, what, 3 weeks earlier. So it's just not true.
I'm looking forward to I've said it a billion times on this show, but – any sort of spiciness we can get between Tennessee and Vanderbilt, I am all here for. It is lately mostly come on the baseball front, and we've talked about that. But, I mean, look, clearly this is not some shocking revelation, watching Clark Lee address the team the way that he did before the Tennessee game. Clearly they don't like Tennessee. They shouldn't like Tennessee.
Exactly.
It's their main rival. So I'm interested to see if they can make something of it this year. Josh Heupel has had a lot of success against Vanderbilt. Can Clark Lee – maybe this year more so than, like, you're looking at what potentially is a pedestrian offense for Tennessee this year. We'll see. Pedestrian quarterback play. This could be an opportunity for Vanderbilt this year.
Yeah, they need to be more competitive because, really, that game last year, 36-23, but remember how it started. Vanderbilt.
How would you rate the offense like Northwest camp?
It's over 10.
Is it
dominant?
Is it close to what you would like to see, or is it pretty far away?
No, I mean, we're still striving to get better and get hit a certain mark.
A lot more of your thoughts to get to on our text line.
The growth that I think Cam's shown in the last couple of days from that particular process, I think, has been really, really encouraging. There's a particular way you have to play quarterback in the NFL, and I think he's figuring out how to balance that with how he's played in the past, and we're trying to mesh those styles together for him. And he's done a great job with it. So there's still growth to be had. We're not where we need to be, certainly. But that's the fun part of training camp. And I think as we stack some practices against some different defenses, I think it'll be fun to see where we're at. I feel good about our trajectory, and I feel good about the process that we have going, and we got to keep pushing to perform.
And that was Brian Callahan today talking about the Tennessee Titans as they are now on the practice field. Welcome in the last segment of Robbie and Rex Road. 102.5 The Game. Joe Rexroad here. Robbie has had to take off here with the car seat delivery situation. I miss the days of car seats. Now I worry about my kids stealing my actual cars. It's such a different life, you know, when you get older. Jake Lyman, next man up, coming up at the top of the hour. And you are in here right now, Jake. So first of all, give us what are we looking at today on Next Man Up?
So today we have Kevin Ingram coming on. Talk a little Vanderbilt, Titans in the 10 o'clock hour. So from 10 to 11, we'll have Kevin on. Chris Sanders, forever Titans wide receiver, going to join us at 11:15. And plenty of Titans talk. I guess they'll get off the practice field in the next hour or so here. So we'll recap what went down over there at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park, and hopefully a better day for Cam Ward, and we can keep the doom and gloom out of our show today. I do have to mention, I heard your texter say that this Titans team is going to be one of the worst teams of all time. That is just absolutely ludicrous.
That's going to be hard to do. That's a high bar.
I mean, they won 3 games last year, and at least on paper, the offensive line and the quarterback are going to be better.
Yeah.
It's hard to be worse than they were last year when those two things are improved. So 0-17 would be a far stretch from what I'm expecting.
Yeah, I think that that's a little bit ambitious. It is. I think it's one of those things where there has been, I think, more pessimism. And again, I think rightfully so. It's the worst team in the league last year. They are struggling. The offense is the focus. The offense is struggling. No one thinks the defense is that great. So I think there's more like pessimism than right. You normally see around a team in camp. Again, even last year, there was some optimism about Levis. There was all this talk about Levis. Of course, there was a little bit of gaslighting probably from within the Titans organization, yeah. Some of the stuff Rand Carthon said. So it's a change for like how you're perceiving all the information as a fan. But, yeah, worst of all time, that is a special level of
right.
Awful.
You guys were talking about DeShone Kizer. I mean, to throw 11 right. touchdowns and 22 interceptions, like that is horrible quarterback play. Cam Ward.
He was very bad.
Even if Cam Ward doesn't have a good rookie season, he would have to be generationally bad for a first overall pick to have numbers like that in his rookie season. So is this team going to win more than 5 or 6 games? Probably not. Could this team only win 2 or 3 games? Possible. But to be 1-16 or 0-17, things would have to go extraordinarily bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't anticipate that. Still a lot of reaction on the text line driven by WilsonGuyHound.com to the Pavia. Pavia is, it's amazing. The intensity of love for him and the intensity of hatred for him is something to behold. He comes up and someone will say this, and someone already just said something like this. I'm going to read this from Skyler. It says, I'm an Arkansas fan, so my life sucks when it comes to college sports, and I have no dog in the fight. But Pavia and Vandy will get smacked this year after the SEC defenses figure Pavia out. Again, I they played a whole year last year. I'm not saying Pavia is going to be throw for 250, run for 100 every game. They're going to win more than 5 games. But this idea that, like, there's something you're going to figure out as a defense, it's assignment football that they force you to play. So if he sees things correctly, which he often does pre-snap, you can get him into something different. And, again, you put a defense in conflict and make him make a choice. Like, there's that. People seem to think there's just this magical answer that they're going to come up with more film study. It's assignment football. So he's going to, if you tackle and you are on your P's and Q's as a defense, and also you don't get yourself sucked in for the deep shot, which they will get you on. Yeah, you can play a good defensive game and stop them. They had some tough offensive games down the stretch. But again, the Georgia Tech game, very good defense, and he was healthier, and he did his thing. I that's just not really a thing to me. It's way overrated. It's kind of like halftime adjustments in football.
I mean, it's one example, but Hugh Freeze has seen Diego Pavia plenty of times. Like, he saw him at Liberty. He saw him at Auburn when Diego was still playing at New Mexico State, and then he saw him last year with Vanderbilt and couldn't stop him anytime. So, I mean, I understand the idea of they got a whole offseason, they can figure something out, but I mean, Hugh Freeze had 3 chances to stop Diego Pavia, and he hasn't been able to do it so far.
I mean, look, all these defense coordinators, they have figured it out. Like, they know the schemes they're going against, right? Some of them are more difficult than others. And so when you have – it's like Navy. If you watch Navy, like, they are running, you know, basically that triple option stuff. But they have a little bit more advanced passing game with that now, and their quarterback can throw it pretty well, Blake Horvath. And so it's like – I mean, you know, it's a numbers game. You have to play assignment football. You have to be in the right spots. You have to be here. You have to be here. Anybody screws up, now there's a problem. And then again, when you're so devoted to dealing with the option stuff, now they can hit you downfield. That's what Vanderbilt can do too. It's not going to work every week, but there's no magical, you know, we have you pegged. He's a good player. He plays like a basketball point guard, right? And so he's out there making decisions on the fly, and usually he makes pretty good ones.
Right. Like, I'm not expecting Vandy is going to go into Austin and beat Texas or go into Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. But to say that they're going to get smacked around the SEC and not be competitive in games where, I mean, Missouri comes here to Nashville this year, Kentucky comes here to Nashville, like, those are games that Vandy very well could be favored in this year. And I think that's where Vandy's put themselves. They're no longer in the cellar of the SEC. They're a competitive team right in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're, yeah, low middle, but still, what were they picked out
12th,
of? 12th out of 16?
13, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and like Kevin Nashville says, Vanderbilt can make adjustments as well on offense. Right. And again, that's the thing. It's like that offense, I love the offense because it's creative. I mean, you don't want to do too much on offense, right? You got to be able to execute, but it's creative. It shows you enough different looks. Some things look the same and they're different plays. And again, like if you have a quarterback who gets it, he does so much to make adjustments, right?
Right.
Like there's not like, so there's not like figuring him out. You just have to, if he keeps making good decisions out there, it's like they're going to at least kill you death by paper cuts, 4 yards here, 6 yards here, and then you can't give up the big shot.
It's, right.
It's going to be fun. I don't know how good Vanderbilt's going to be on defense. I mean, they've added some players. They've done pretty well. They've got some NIL money. They've been able to, like, I think close the gap in some ways like they couldn't in previous eras of college football. But how much? I don't know. I mean, that's a big question too. Like, can they be – because last year they had some really good defensive performances. Hugh Freeze, I mean, I still can't believe right. They couldn't run the ball
17-7.
At all. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the question with Vanderbilt, like you talk about figuring out Pavia. I don't know if that's a big question for this year. The question is, this is Pavia's last year. Can Clark Lee and Tim Beck and Jerry Kill find another quarterback after that who can execute this system and continue to keep the upward momentum going for Vanderbilt?
Yeah, the huge loss when they lose him, for sure. And they need to take advantage of this year also to just help the program, to put themselves in a different spot. Last thing real quick, Texter said, let's not overlook the fact we're talking about SEC school spending the summer on how to stop Vanderbilt. What a time to be a Vandy fan. I think that says it all. And with that, Robbie and Rex Show is over. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next, 102.5 The Game.